Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Despite repeated reports of famine and humanitarian collapse in Gaza, mounting evidence continues to question this narrative. If Gaza is not facing mass starvation, as some claim, then why is Israel under increasing pressure and scrutiny? And that is to ensure the flow of aid into the region. Joining us now is Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch. He's the director of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. He's a former director of military prosecution for Judea and Samaria. And this is to unpack the layers of legal, moral, and practical complexity surrounding Israel's role in aid distribution. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. It's a very complex situation, but can we just start with a central claim? Is Gaza currently facing famine conditions? What does the data tell us?
No, it's not, Howard. What we're talking about, firstly, good morning to you, to your listeners. Let's break the Gaza Strip into three different areas, because that's really what we're talking about. You have the southern area where the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is predominantly functioning there just in since they were set up in May 26. They've handed out some 92 million meals, more than enough for all of the population, much more calories than ever would be needed. You have then the central area of the Gaza Strip, Deir al-Balah and those areas, where the IDF predominantly hasn't even operated there yet. That's the places where you see, for example, the restaurants with shawarma and the conditoria. Those are still functioning. The buildings are still standing. And there you see everyone, the open markets full of the different goods. Then you have the northern area of the Gaza Strip, where the UN is meant to be functioning, but the UN refuses to accept deliveries of aid. It refuses to accept, as we saw just in a press conference just yesterday, when the UN spokesman was asked, well, why doesn't the UN allow the IDF to accompany the distribution of aid? Because the UN says that 75% of the trucks that they've taken into the northern Gaza Strip have been looted, have been stolen by Hamas, by the terrorists. So why don't you allow the Israeli forces to accompany you? And said, oh no, we don't do that. They would rather the aid be stolen rather than it actually get to the people. And that's what we're seeing really in the Gaza Strip, Howard, all the way from the north to the south. It doesn't matter how you break the Gaza Strip up. We're seeing an effective delivery of aid where it doesn't concern the UN, but where you see the UN involved, they have an inherent interest in maintaining Hamas's leadership over the Gaza Strip. They are supporting Hamas in their war efforts, and that's where you're seeing these fabricated pictures of children with all types of muscular diseases being broadcast around the world. Yeah. I don't know if you saw the expose by David Collier. Amazing. You see a picture of a poor woman who doesn't appear to be unfed, with a skeletal baby who suffers from some type of a muscular disease. But they've cut out his little brother, who's standing to the right of him, who seems well-fed and well-clothed. But that's the perception.
And this was the front page of New York Times, of The Guardian. This photo became the iconic photo of starvation, which in of itself is a problem. Well, obviously it's many, many problems. But the fact that if there is starvation in Gaza, then why is it so hard to find a photo of a genuinely starving child?
Well, so that's the point, Howard. There's nothing here really that's true about this idea of the starvation. Is there a massive amount of food of all types? Probably not. I think we can probably all agree on that. And that is, you have to look what's also going on in the background. We just ended another series of what they call talks with these genocidal maniacs in Doha. They've refused yet another deal for a ceasefire, which would have seen the release of the hostages and more aid going into Gaza. And so now they're looking to use the media around the world in order to say, you know what, we were right. We shouldn't take the deal. We shouldn't stop fighting. We shouldn't disarm. We shouldn't free the hostages. Why? Because Israel is starving babies. It's diversion tactics. That's exactly what we're seeing here. And the international press, because of its inherent bias against Israel, is playing into it and falling into that trap every single time.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Why has the narrative gained so much traction in international media? Why aren't they asking the questions? Why are they being caught over and over again? It's got to be hugely embarrassing when they put a photo on their front page of what they say is a starving baby, but actually it's a child suffering from a terrible illness. Why? They have to be embarrassed, and it's happening over and over again. Why do they get caught so many times?
Why do you say they have to be embarrassed, Howard? Why do you think that they have any qualms about adopting and promoting the terror narrative, whether it's right or wrong? How many of them actually apologized for the false claim that Israel bombed the El Ali hospital on the 17th of October, 2023? No one. No consequences. There are no consequences for when they reported the ridiculous, outrageous statement of Tom Fletcher from the UN, who said that in the next 48 hours, 14,000 babies are going to die. Remember that? World saw that headline. It was just a blatant lie. But they don't care. There are no consequences for spreading this false propaganda. They pay no real respect for the truth whatsoever, and so they can keep on going. And it fuels all of those people who don't really know, and those who are looking to spread the propaganda just sit there rubbing their hands together, saying, "Oh, these idiots bought another lie."
In terms of responsibility, does any responsibility lie with Egypt, with the United Nations, in terms of aid, supplying of aid and aid distribution? What is the legal obligation in terms of the various players?
So here we have to talk about you're talking about two different things here. The UN on the one hand, Egypt on the other hand. There is no precedent, I think, in modern day warfare, at least not in for the last 200 years or so, that I've seen, where a neighboring country that appears to support the country under attack refuses to allow those people any type of refuge, closed its doors. The world closed its doors to the Jews running away out of Germany because they had nowhere else to go and nobody wanted them. But the Gazans, why isn't Egypt really fulfilling its legal duty to allow them to seek refuge in Egypt, in Sinai, create a humanitarian zone there, but they refuse. And nobody talks about that either. No one's interested in the legal obligations of Egypt to allow people to run away, to move out of the way of the war, because really no one actually cares about the Gazans. They're only interested in using them as pawns. The same is true of the UN. The UN should be a neutral organization that should facilitate the provision of aid to the Gazan people under the conditions of war. And yet they refuse to work with the most effective humanitarian organization that's been set up in years, with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, because the UN has lost. All of these players have lost their way. They don't care about the humanitarian considerations. They don't care about the starving Gazans, whether they say they do or not. It's not true. They're only using them as weaponry against Israel, to attack Israel, because otherwise they would be working hand in hand with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation and delivering aid directly into the hands of the Gazan people, rather than through Hamas, who they themselves say have looted and stolen 75% of the trucks. So the UN has a responsibility, but the UN's approach is to support the terrorists rather than support the people.
What will it look like in a couple of years from now, when what we call the fog of war settles, maybe, or clears, in terms of the United Nations and UNRWA? Will they survive their own behavior and their own decisions during and before this war?
So I think the answer to that is very much dependent on not on their decisions, but on the decisions taken in Jerusalem. To what extent will Israel's government continue to allow these terror-supporting, terror-infiltrated organizations to continue functioning in at least in the area that's under Israel's control. And that really is the question. Do we care about UNRWA functioning in Lebanon? Gesinntheit, as they say. Let them do whatever they want. But are we going to allow them to continue functioning in Jerusalem? There are UNRWA schools, or there were UNRWA schools in Jerusalem, an UNRWA supply depot in Jerusalem. These have now been closed, and I hope that the government will really continue on with the actions against UNRWA, because UNRWA has to pass, at least within Israel, has to pass out of this area, cease to exist, and really be obliterated. As regards the other UN organizations, and in Israel, we have 22 different UN organizations, Howard. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that. There's the UN TSO, the UN Truce Supervision Organization, right? What truce are they supervising? So they're supervising the truce from 1949. Oh. So I ask you, Howard, how's that going? Have they managed to stop any of the wars along the way?
Oh, it's crazy. Like,
what are you people doing here? It's an entire factory of UN garbage that sits in Jerusalem. OCHA, the Organization for the Coordination of Humanitarian Aid. This is the UN organization that is solely responsible for UN washing the Hamas false death tolls and spreading them around the world. If you look on OCHA's website, they still say that Israel killed 471 people on the night of the 17th of October in the Al Ali hospital. Like, everyone knows it's a lie.
Absolutely.
But so the question is, how is Israel's approach to the UN going to change? Will it change? Should Israel at all stay a member of the UN? What do we need that for? I often claim that our membership in the UN is akin to being a battered wife. We every day we get up in the morning, we know we're going to get the hell beaten out of us, and every day we go back. At some stage, we have to wake up as well and get out and say, you know what, this is an abusive relationship. It is violent. It will kill us in the end.
That is where we leave it. I'd love your thoughts on that. Should Israel stay as part of the United Nations? Should it stay a member, or should it leave? Is it akin to being a battered and abused wife? Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, former director of military prosecution for Judea and Samaria. Thank you for a very enlightening conversation.